With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also powered by PodMachine, the simplest way to grow and edit your podcast. Sign up now at podmachine.com and use the code HustleShare to get one free edit.
But one factor which in particular comes in here in the Philippines and in the NCR region in Manila, one of the densest cities in the world. You think about this, so you have a store that's like having a radius of like 2 kilometers, leading to like a really good outlook in terms of profitability.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here's your host, Ronster Baitiong.
Welcome to the latest episode of HustleShare Podcast. Finally got this guy. I've been talking to this guy prior to my injury. So if you're listening to this, I have a little dirty secret. For the past 7 weeks, I have not been able to walk or put any weight on my right leg because I broke my ankle with a broken fibula. And one of the fondest memories I've had when I was still walking was going to Makati to meet this guy. Now, several months ago, it was a rainy day. But again, finally, we have him. Because again, shout out to Paolo Campos of Gaia Founders, who told me to check out this guy. And I said, we're going to do this episode, and finally this happened. So without further ado, let's welcome to the show, Mr. Julian Schumacher of Dart. Julian, welcome to the show, finally. All right. Again, thanks so much for finally being here. And how are you doing? It's been a while.
It's been a while now. Thanks for having me. And I'm quite impressed by your memory. I think that's all spot on. It was a rainy day. It was in the Kaya office and not bad. And I'm like, as you said, like super excited to be here on the show.
Right. Again, you guys were doing amazing stuff. I was blown away what you're trying to do, but it's now time to tell the world about it. So before I get carried away, I need to ask you the $1 million question. Julian, what's your hustle?
Yeah, I'm one of the three co-founders of Dart. And I mean, ultimately what we are doing, we deliver groceries to your door in 15 minutes. So ultimately, from placing the order online through our app to having it at your place, we do that in less than 15 minutes. And on top of that, it's like normal supermarket. So you can buy from us like fresh goods, fruits and vegetables, snacks, beer, wines, so anything when you think of a supermarket. And at like normal supermarket prices, so no convenience markup or anything. And there are no exceptions to this. So ultimately, like a super convenient, easy supermarket getting stuff directly to your door.
That's amazing. And again, that's what blew me away. Because anything that you can do in 15 minutes in the Philippines is fast. Okay, considering the traffic and the craziness that comes in between. That's what blew me away. And again, if that's the SLA or the commitment that you guys do, I'm very curious to see how you're going to get that done. But I need you first to buckle up, because before we talk about Dart and how you can give us everything that we need in 15 minutes, I need you to buckle up, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All right, there we go, riding 500 kilometers per hour in the Autobahn. Because we're going to have to go back and see how you started out. So again, we've had a lot of your fellows in the Kaya Founders realm. We've had Cons and a bunch of other guys coming. Andreas of Hoofnoggle, right? Alex, you got next. So hopefully, Alex, if we can find time, you got next. I'm shouting you out as early as now of Italy. But again, we've had a lot of your friends and contemporaries that also came from Germany that is now in the Philippines. But I want to understand your origin story, Julian. What was it like growing up? And was there any hint of entrepreneurship that you had? And if there was, well, who were your mentors and inspiration?
Yes, I think the Autobahn reference is very good. So as you pointed out, I'm originally from Germany, from Hamburg to be precise. And if you look at my past, I think there are like three quite like episodes or points which are important, which brought me basically to where I'm now. I mean, initially, it's like really school days and also my family, high school. So actually, you know, I grew up in Hamburg. Like I was born in Hamburg. I grew up there like until the end of high school, so didn't really move or anything. But my parents have always been like very supportive, right? So in terms of education, especially, they were always like spot on and pushing me and my brothers to actually like do well. But at the same time, I mean, they were like pretty clear in terms of rules, right? So it was not that we got a lot of money or so, we got our pocket money, but anything else, well, we had to work for that. So basically, since I was like 12, 14, I've been doing like the small hustles already and been working in parallel to school. And that was pretty formative, I would say. And then my family always like came from, I wouldn't call it entrepreneurial background, but they've always been independent and having their own small companies. And yeah, I remember this time like sitting with my dad at the breakfast table and talking about like, how does vet work in Germany? And that has been like this like business and independent that really like already gave me some background that this might be an option. But then ultimately did my high school, finished that one, did 2 years in the army in Germany, and then obviously off to my studies and like went for business, economics ultimately. And I mean, there it was pretty clear. We'll go into the business direction, explored quite a lot of things, did my studies across Europe, also spent some time in Singapore.
Wow.
That was a really good time. I mean, that was probably like one of the best times I had in my life, and also really made me very fond of Southeast Asia.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, when I started my bachelor's studies, I was like, at this time, I mean, was this like sort of pre-financial crisis, and I was like, yeah, I want to be an investment banker, right? That sounded awesome. I did an internship in an investment bank. I was right. Like, okay, that's not my thing. So I've been exploring quite a bit, but yeah, ultimately came around and then finished my studies, like met a lot of like cool friends, including Constantine, for instance, which obviously has been like quite important for bringing me here. But then went into the like starting off my first work, and like as a like German who's like interested in startups, right? I kicked off my career with Rocket for a short stint. Worked in the more in the European ecosystem with an early stage startup who went from like within a couple of months into like I think 6-7 countries at that point. Wow. Really helped them to grow. Mm-hmm. So like really good time, and at that time like Rocket Internet was like in Germany when it came to startups and entrepreneurship, the shit, right?
Yep.
But then decided to actually switch sides, and I went to Bain. So I've been working in the private equity in the consulting industry, but very much focused on private equity clients. I've been doing anything with them from like ultimately looking at like assets for them, like really taking the investor point of view. Is this like a good investment asset? What are problems? What are opportunities? Then also help them in terms of value creation, ultimately to exit topics. And that has been obviously quite a formative time, Bain. So on the one hand, I mean, like this mindset of identifying like problems or opportunities, right? Like really looking at numbers, diving into them, making sense of these numbers. Mm-hmm. What is the root cause? That's something which is like helping me today even tremendously. Mm-hmm. And then when you find opportunities or problems, like actually solving or like implementing stuff in a structured way. Plus, and that's also a big one, I mean, communication, right? You can do a lot, but you also have to tell people the story behind it and that mm-hmm. they understand it. And that's like being in the team setting or with investors or potential partners. This is like really, really good skill.
All right. Now, I want to just zero in. I'll track back a little bit and put it in reverse. Because a couple of things that, again, are eye-opening here. Because if your exposure to startups really originated from Rocket, and I don't know if I ever got to told you, I also had Rocket exposure through Groupon very early on, around 2011. So I understand the hustle and the type of execution they did. What did you learn over that short stint that you said that you were there for? Because again, Rocket was very much, you know, shameless in how their model was. A lot of people during that time were giving them a lot of flack about it. Like, hey, you're just replicating and whatnot. But what they didn't understand is that, yes, you know, they were replicating ideas, if you want to call it that, but they were out executing everyone. And that's the key, because in startups, at the end of the day, ideas are cheap. Execution is gold. And again, you're going to have to iterate and validate fast. But what was your experience in that you still carry through now? And then later on, we'll talk about your consulting experience in Bain.
Yeah. I mean, what you said, fully agree, right? There are like 1,000 ideas out there. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I mean, you can always start an idea and execute on that one. But if you like one-to-one end on this one, or you take something from a different continent and like then apply it in a different context. Right. I mean, yes, the idea is there, but you have to adapt it in a way that it actually turns out to be different. So I agree with you on that one. And I had a really good time at Rocket, right? I learned a lot in terms of like scaling fast, adapting the product, like really working also with numbers. I mean, we went like really deep into numbers in the different like countries, different like cohorts to really understand like, hey, how is our service, our product actually doing? And then adapting it to the needs and improving it. Right? And that is obviously like scaling, improving at the same time and growing the business. So that was like really impressive and really cool to see. Plus, I mean, also when you see like you put a like bunch of like super like driven and smart people into a room and give them some sort of structure in terms of problems they should work on. Yep. That obviously is helping a lot. And that's something we obviously try to replicate mm-hmm. to get like good people on board who are like dedicated mm-hmm. and then give them the right structure to solve problems.
And that's great because I'm looking at, again, your LinkedIn, and that ability of Rocket to identify a business model and literally as much as possible, copy paste that from another country to another country. It's a little bit of a foreshadowing of what you did with Gorillas and now with Dart, right? Because again, it's quick commerce. It's being able to do that, but we'll talk about that after we talk about Bain. And again, one thing I want to understand about consulting and PE, and I've had so many people join here with that experience, is that it gives you an uncanny ability to identify problems and to solve them, and also utilize the power of cash and also minimizing risk. Because in PE and VC, it's a totally different ballgame, right? The risk appetite is different, but the check sizes are, oh my goodness, not even close, right? Again, for context, if for those people who don't understand what the difference with VC is, basically risk appetite and check sizes. To super simplify it, but if you want to know more, we'll probably put that in the show note of what the difference between VC and private equity. But in your experience with Bain and probably also with True Venturo, in a way, what was the skills and the point of view that you had that you really mastered during this point of your career? Because at the end of the day, the macros matter and the unit economics matter more than anything, right? For you to see if this opportunity is worth pursuing. This is what I see sometimes with homegrown startup founders. They fall in love with either the worst case that I see is they fall in love with the solution more than the problem. And then they don't understand the macros. How big is this TAM? What is the target market? A lot of people with consulting background, before they even try to attack an opportunity, they look at those factors first, then create a solution. What's that like for you?
Yeah. I mean, let me actually like focus on the private equity side of things with Bain. I mean, we were helping them as a consulting company, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, as a private equity investor, you obviously look at the market, but the main difference is there is sort of an like already profitable asset, which is doing revenues, which is doing profits, and which has a trajectory in one or the other direction. Normally they're growing, but they're also investors who are looking at like sort of distressed assets, right? Mm-hmm. But let's assume you're looking at a like growing asset, like 3, 4, 5, whatever percent. So what you're really looking at, you look at the market size, but you, in every aspect, you really zoom in on the details. So it's not about like how big is the market, but is the market growing like 3, 4, or 5%? And how is your market share developing? So by that, you sort of predict, like with customer feedback, you predict how is the top line developing. And then you really zoom into the individual details, like, hey, what are your gross profit margins? How can you like improve them? What are your operating costs? So you really like go way more deeper into the individual details because the company is already way more advanced. Now compare that to a venture capital investor. Right. Probably even like pre-product, pre-revenue. So what you're looking at is ultimately a like how big is the market? But that's it, right? How big is the market? And then you on paper think like, okay, how is actually this value proposition compared to other value propositions? And then you on paper look, okay, what are the unit economics? Right. But it's all way more high level because you have less data. The company is like not really, it's maybe in existence, but doesn't have any data. And then between these like seed, pre-seed investors, which are very high level, come with this mindset of like big ideas, like how big is the TAM? You ultimately go to like as a company progresses, you go to private equity, where you look at like profitable companies and which came there, maybe even like bootstrapped, which a VC would have never touched because the market is too small or something. Correct. But then they become like very profitable for a PE investor.
Correct. And again, it's just making it in the black. You don't make it in the black, good luck. You're always going to be in VC land. And again, ultimately, it's a gamble on the team because regardless of TAM, regardless of unit economics, if you're playing the VC game or you're coming in as a founder and you're coming after a big idea with a big TAM and you have a solution, especially in the very early stages, it's all about the team that you assemble. Again, key operative word is team, not just one founder. It's a team. You need to have, if you can't convince another co-founder to risk it all with you, how will you convince a VC or any type of investor to give their monetary investment to you if you can't get another fool like you, like me, to join you? But okay, I want to now focus on, after Bain, you did True Venturo. What was this? Is this similar to what you did with Bain? Because then after this, you then went gorillas on us. But what was that stint like? And what did you learn?
Yeah, True Venturo was quite a different approach. So Bain, ultimately consulting company, service company, right? And then with True Venturo, it's a family office, company builder, and venture capital investor. So ultimately changing on the principal side and being like deploying the equity and also going way more early stage. So really into the VC environment. And that obviously enhanced my like view of this like investor landscape. So what we just discussed before was a very different environment. So we were really looking either for investment point of view, like what is the market? What is the value proposition? How can they grow, right? If they have like certain traction, how's that doing? Like really diving super deep into customer cohorts. And then specifically looking at the team, what have they done before? Is this a good fit? And as you correctly also pointed out, I mean, you never do this alone, right? It's like always the team. Can they pull this off? And then at the same time, from a company building perspective, I mean, there we came up with ideas and basically started ramping them up. And then we're putting a team on this. And that's the same. I mean, looking at like required skill set, what are the roles we need? And then looking for people who can like get these like set these certain roles. What are their skill set? Does this match? And also like, do they match with each other, right? In terms of skill set, but also on a personal level.
That's amazing. Now, last part before we take our first break, let's talk about gorillas. So for those people, again, most people in this side of the world probably don't understand how big gorillas is. This is not the band in the 2000s. That were cartoons, by the way. If you think that Julian was a gorillas part of that band, no, that's not it. It is Gorillas, the e-commerce company from Germany. Can you just paint us a picture of what Gorillas is and what did you do there and how big did it go in during this stint?
Yeah. So ultimately, Gorillas was respectively is doing something similar to what Dart is doing. So they do grocery delivery in, at that point, it was 10 minutes. Now they actually like softened that a bit. But basically delivering normal supermarket goods and grocery goods to your door. And they started off in Germany. So it's a Berlin-based company founded by one Turkish founder and a German founder during the like really beginning of the pandemic. Wow. And then they basically skyrocketed, becoming the like fastest unicorn. I'm not quite sure if it was in the world or in Europe.
Wow.
So I think after less than a year, they already achieved unicorn status. Ooh. And have been growing like internationally, like growing into other cities within Germany. So overall, like super impressive story of what they built there and how many customers they actually made happy.
Right. Okay. I'll go back to your PE hat here. What were the market factors that allowed Gorillas to get that done fast while you guys were there? Because again, it has to be the perfect opportunity, timing, and everything coming into place for you to be able to scale that fast. Because eventually, that's what you're going to try to replicate with Dart, right? But what were those factors that allowed that to happen?
So I think the main factor was or is still actually this like value proposition they're offering. Grocery delivery in Germany was never a big thing. It was like from a usability point of view, quite difficult, right? You basically you put a basket together and then you could like select it. Same day delivery with a 3-hour window, so next day with a 2-hour window, but not really like in a convenient way, not really thought from a customer perspective.
Got it.
And that's what Gorillas really changed. I mean, this like 10 minutes at that point was really wowing the customers. And we got like so much feedback that they said like, hey, is this really true? How you're doing it? And people were really speculating, like, hey, do you have like vans driving through the city? And then when customers are already in the app, you start pre-packing stuff. So there was like really this like myth around Gorillas.
Right.
So really also viral growth. But then ultimately, I mean, delivering to them really wowing the customers, and that led to like super good retention rates. Customers were like buying again, and by that, like really fueling this growth. So that was the one point. The other point also, I mean, pretty good timing, to be honest. We never had like such like strong lockdowns as you had here. So in Germany, we were always able to leave the house. We were always able to go outside or to supermarkets. Right? Nice. But nevertheless, it was really good timing. So people were obviously scared. No one like necessarily wanted to leave the house. So in general, grocery delivery really got bumped up. And then like coming with a new, like super good value proposition plus really consumer interest, that made it really like ramp up super fast.
All right, now let's take our first break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Dart and how you're then able to replicate this and try to replicate it in the crazy country called the Philippines. We'll talk about that more after the break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Julian Schumacher. And before we took our first break, we talked about that experience of Gorillas. Now, million-dollar question again for you here is, how did the opportunity for Dart come through? And again, coming from, again, having that great experience from Gorillas in Germany, what led you to want to do Dart halfway across the world in a less developed country like the Philippines?
Yeah. So let me talk a little bit more about Gorillas. I mean, ultimately, I talked a lot about how it made customers super happy, right? Seeing that was amazing, and customers reordering again. So that was a great experience. But then there were obviously also, like with every startup, some issues which had to be tackled. And for Gorillas in Germany or any developed country, it's the unit economics and make them work. So, and that was like challenging to actually turn like stores profitable, but like really put Gorillas there on a good path, and seeing that this is really possible, but not that easy. And what happened then at that time is that basically Constantine Roberts reached out to me, still being in the Philippines, and came up with the idea of, hey, let's maybe take a look at this model if we want to replicate it and do the same thing here. And what I did, I mean, ultimately, I looked at three factors, right? One was value proposition, second was market, third was profitability.
Okay.
Value proposition, I mean, we talked about very clear, also to what you have here in the market, very clear value proposition, and how you make grocery delivery better for consumers. Mm. Second, market size. Obviously, grocery is a big market, but in particular here, I mean, it's if you look at the NCR region, if you look at Cebu, highly high density, right? Yep. This model is a lot about density and like the dark stores and how much money people you can actually service from within one dark store. So the density really worked in our favor, and combining that with like very like good income levels in the urban area. So that was really working in favor of this model. So market like check. And then the third point, and that got me really excited, was actually the profitability outlook. Nice. Because you have very good like AOV levels here, like shopping baskets are quite big. But then you have low fulfillment costs and also rent costs and everything is low. So ultimately the profitability outlook is very positive. And that's what we are already seeing now from our first like sort of weeks of operations, that turning this model profitable here is really good. So ultimately coming from a business perspective, right, it was like value proposition, market profitability, or like checks. And then for me, I was like even 10 years, 11 years after being in Singapore, I always wanted to go back to Southeast Asia. So and that was like now like an amazing chance. So overall, from like initially discussing this to taking the decision to do it, that took me 2 weeks.
Wow. What? 2 weeks already? Nice.
Yeah. If I believe in something, I act fast.
That's amazing.
That was really cool. So 2 weeks, handed in my resignation with Gorillas. Got a lot of very positive support from them. They're very like fostering of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately moved over to the Philippines in March. And that was 6 months ago now.
That is amazing. So, all right. With that much conviction in a 2 week span, I'm pretty sure even if you had all those checkboxes ticked, right, there's going to be some things that will catch you by surprise. And that's what I want to know. What are the biggest challenges in your early stages of creating Dart to when you then moved all the way here?
Yeah. I mean, let me walk you a little bit through the history now since I moved over and like where we are now.
Okay.
So as you came over in March, and then Tommy and me started to like very fast actually open up our first like store in a very like very very MVP way. No. And then also our CTO, third co-founder Subu, joined. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the decision when we decided, okay, let's pause this for a little bit. Let's really build up our own tech. So that was the initial point where we really started building on tech and being able to adapt it more to like how the local e-commerce system, how local e-commerce apps are being built. And then ultimately went officially live with a new platform beginning of July. And that's where we really started adapting the product to the local needs. And there are a lot of things, right? So on the one hand, that's a very obvious one. The assortment comparing Germany to here is very different, right? I knew like German assortment. I know what like from a consumer point of view, from Gorillas point of view, but here this was a complete black box for me.
Right.
So that was a lot where we really had to, on the one hand, like build from scratch an assortment, but then also based on customer feedback, what they're searching for, like really add more and more products. And to be honest, I mean, we got very lucky with Robinsons and their support as an investor and from an operational point of view in that aspect. Mm-hmm. But that's the one thing. Then the second thing was obviously from an operational point of view. I mean, you already mentioned that before. Traffic, it's a thing here. I actually learned that the Philippines is probably the only country I've heard of where traffic is an adjective.
Yep.
That was a thing. So like just Blueprint Gorillas didn't work. We did a lot of testing, like how far during different times can we go from our store to our like delivery areas.
Yep. Right?
So there was a lot of adoption. then obviously in terms of like product, like how does the app look like? But, and then ultimately, I think the biggest one for us was really customer acquisition and marketing.
Yes.
Because there are so many cultural differences. Like the Filipino marketing is way more playful. You have to be very clear in the messaging you have to do. It's also, I feel like, a bit more skeptical when it comes to things. So you have to really make it very clear what are the value proposition. You have to incentivize like trying it out for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the part where we've been like testing out the most to actually find now this like marketing and like approach, and combining that with reflecting that in our app, that we are really now able to like grow significantly week on week.
Now, one thing I'm very impressed with is that you said you focused on tech early on, before you even from March till July. And this is one thing that I've seen a lot of first-time founders, or again, founders struggle with, where they easily focus on tech and they take forever to ship something. And even the worst case is they built something nobody wants. While you were building the MVP, what were the key moves that you guys did that allowed you to then build and ship in July and have initial traction right from the get-go?
Yeah. I mean, so we really kicked it off with a Shopify web page, right? To really build some initial traction. But what we saw already from the data is that conversion rates didn't really work out, and the app was really not built in a way that we could do it. So, and that's also, I mean, Gorillas basically used a product from a similar app and really scaled based on that one. And that worked well in the beginning, but it had definitely some shortcomings.
Okay.
And that's why we actually decided to like completely custom build everything.
Wow.
So we completely custom built our app, and we completely custom built our backend. And that was a decision which obviously took a bit longer. We could have scaled on the Shopify product. But then it would have been like way more iterations, and ultimately down the road, way more like work of maintaining this and like changing it. And what we're seeing now, I mean, every week we're doing new releases, every week we're adding new product features, and especially also on the backend side that we have there, our own system. We are super easy and like just integrating new tools, which are helping us to like make it better for customers, like,
right,
get better, like, I don't know, better promotion code functionality or better operational tools. So that's something where I would say it depends a little bit on the market, right? But ultimately, think of an MVP, right? Test something, but really like think of it as an MVP. And if you see like certain products, we decided to abandon it fully. Mm-hmm. And instead of like based on the learnings, based on what we know, build something from scratch, which put our like launch back by 2 months. Mm-hmm. But now we are all like super happy we did it.
That's amazing. And I want to now focus on the business model, because again, you've seen this with Gorillas, right? But again, it's you said it earlier, it's a black box. And at the end of the day, any business model that's multi-sided with the demand and supply marketplace is easily one of the hardest business models you can tap into. And that's what I want to know. Where did you focus on first? Obviously, supply is paramount, but again, easily saying, okay, supply will tap into it, but without zero network, without zero access to the supply, it will take longer. How did you tackle both sides, and how did you get that done?
That's like a super good question, because it was one of the points which we have like thinking about a lot, right? If you look at the like ecosystem, like as a retailer, as a supermarket, in our sense, we need like probably 2,000 SKUs, and you need like, I don't know how many suppliers from how many like companies and FMCG companies this is ultimately coming from. And then, I mean, what you can also always do, you work with a wholesaler, and the wholesaler is giving you quite a lot. But the wholesale environment in the Philippines is not very reliable. You have a lot of stock issues. They cannot deliver if you need something.
Yep.
So what we did to solve the supply problem, mm-hmm. we teamed up with Robinsons. So after after Kaya founders, Robinsons and in particular Rubina, they have been our first investor, and basically on the one hand injected money into the company, But then secondly, they really helped us out with their like knowledge of being like the largest grocery supermarket chain in the Philippines. And that really like 4 points, right? I talked about the assortment. So initially, they really helped us building our first assortment. So how does it look like? What are the products customers are looking for? I had no idea, right? So talking with them really
helped. Essentials, rice, technically sugar, any spices, you know, these little things. The only difference is brand, technically. I'm just talking locally here. Okay.
Bread is actually a really good, one of our best sellers, to be honest.
Yeah. So every Filipino is
not beating rice though.
Right. But yes, okay. So the assortments, okay, there's factor number one. What are the second one?
The other ones are then based on the assortment. And Rain Robinson's has obviously all the supplier relationships. And we were able to tap into their like super preferential margins. So ultimately, really good margin outlook already. Mm-hmm. Third one is, I mean, if you really want to like scale then your stores, you need to have a really good supply chain, which is ultimately delivering your products into your dark stores, into our dark stores. Mm-hmm. And that's something which Robinson is doing for us, right? We can tap into their own distribution centers. They are delivering to our stores.
Nice.
Yeah. And these are actually like the main points where you said like, okay, look, we have the right assortment for the customers. We can do it at a right price point. We don't have to take care of all the like logistics behind it. We just take care of our own business model. Mm-hmm. And that was a tremendous help to be focused and to really give like good prices and like value to the customer.
And that's where I really want to find out today, because you said that the Philippines is ripe, and the way you're positioning it and the way you look at the unit economics has always been a good market to get profitable. Wherein there's a misconception about e-commerce, especially in FMCG, that it is a volume game and the margins are very low, especially if you don't have volume, right? But I think if you really position, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this is just me assuming, if you position the right service for the right segment of the market, where with the rising middle class, and you said that density, usually they're bunched up in certain communities anyway, that cart size with the right margins and with the right SKUs, if you get that fast and people pay for convenience usually for that type of market size, you'll eventually get that magic formula fast. Is that a right assumption that, you know, right SKUs, right product positioning, and probably several more factors, you'd get that pretty fast, even if you do have competition in that market?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's like pretty very correct what you're saying. So let me add a few more details. So what you said, like obviously like having the right products at the right price, that's super important. But that's then really helping you if you add more and more and more customers can buy more from you. Ultimately, this is growing your basket sizes. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, the margin point of view, like we are looking at like super good margins that are way beyond what we projected. Nice. But if you compare that, basket sizes, margins, and compare that to Europe, well, here basket sizes are lower, margins are lower. So ultimately, your sort of all the money you make on every order, it's lower than what you have in Europe. Wow. But what then really comes in is the lower fulfillment costs. And that is really making a tremendous change. So if you look at our model, here it's way less of a scale game than it is in Europe. I mean, in Germany, I've been still working there, like we have been looking at like probably needed like 800 average daily orders to turn a store profitable. And for us, it's like a fraction of that, right? So here it's actually based on the structural like conditions in the market, AOV, margins, and then ultimately down to the fulfillment costs, it is way more profitable and you need less scale to turn this profitable. And that applies pretty much to all the more developing countries. Mm-hmm. But one factor which in particular comes in here in the Philippines and in the NCR region in Manila, it's like one of the densest cities in the world. Yep. I think even the densest city in the world. Yep. And then you think about this. So you have a store that's like sort of like having a radius of like 2 kilometers. Right. In Germany, we had like probably like less than 100,000 people living in that one. Here we have 500,000 to 600,000. right? Correct. It's like more like than 7-8 times the density. So better unit economics and more orders per store, leading to like really good outlook in terms of profitability.
And that this then shows you the amount of preparation that you guys put in, because you understood the market factors. It was easier to execute because you knew what you were going for and the type of people. But last question before we take our last break, since you were looking for the right type of people, and again, they can be a little fickle-minded, you know, with the right segment. How were you able to get the initial traction that you needed? Because if the supply was checked, then demand was there. But again, even if you have a nice SAM, low cost of fulfillment, you need to get the consumerist Filipino that wants to that wants to pay for convenience to ride on. And this is where a lot of founders struggle, getting real traction. And especially in this game, you need repeat purchase. How were you able to get that?
Yeah. So the repeat purchase was from day one. That was never a problem. We always had like customers who ordered once from us. They were really amazed. They tested it out. They saw our prices are good. They saw our assortment is good. And then they were seeing that, well, this is actually like working the 15 minutes, right? So the repurchasing rate was like from day one good. Like initially we had like what I said, like how to attract the customers, right? How do you make them like buy first? And there, I think, to be honest, there is no like silver bullet to this, right? It's a lot of like testing, measuring, seeing what works, trying out something different. If something is working, well, then you basically zero in on that one. But there's like, so firstly, there's no one like channel which is like really killing it for you, right? So we did a lot. We did like offline activations. We did like already like some out of home campaigns in the areas we were live. We did like online marketing. And then we tried out also a lot of like different messaging. So 15 minutes, for instance, that's something we tried out. Then we tried out like, hey, sort of delivery promise. If it's less than 20 minutes, you get your delivery feedback. So like making it like less risk averse. Then ultimately you zero in onto the message and the value proposition you're putting out there, which is really attracting customers. And then if you have found that, that's then the point where you start like investing more marketing money, right? That's before that, well, could be that you're actually just blowing it away. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's test, learn, repeat.
And that's amazing. Because again, if you get that sweet spot with how consumerist Filipinos are and how they like to spend that money, especially for convenience, you would easily get that traction. And the beauty of it, again, if you don't need massive scale and you have good margins, then I can just imagine how that P&L would look like very, very soon. But again, let's take our last break. And when we come back, let's now talk about the experience of how you can now scale Dart and also the fundraising game to scale this. But let's talk about that more after the break. Hey, Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh, payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey, Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals.
You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers. I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. And we're back in the break. We are still with Julian Schumacher, again, who told us how they were able to capitalize on this opportunity, which, again, if you're a founder listening to this, this is a classic way. And that's what I've seen how, you know, with Kaya founders, Paolo likes to call it second generation startup founders, because they've done it before. And in a similar market, they can do it again. So if you're right now, if you're in the precipice or you're in the cusp of asking yourself, like, hey, can I be a startup founder? And you're already in another startup. This is the game. This is your unfair advantage because you've done it before. And if you really understand your metrics and how to execute, there's a high likelihood that you're going to be successful. And companies like Kaya Founders are ready to help you out and make you scale and bet on your team if you build the right team. And that's what I want to talk about. Because obviously, you can't do this alone, Julian. Let's all talk about the co-founders that you have here. And what was their background? How did you build that dynamic working with them?
Yeah. So we are three co-founders at Dart. So it's Tommy, the CEO, Subu, our CTO, and me. Mm-hmm. And if you look at this, I mean, we actually have a quite complementary skill set.
Nice.
So I'm sort of like, I'm taking care of anything which is top line related. I have really worked in this specific business model before.
Yeah.
And like together with them, like we're working on the guidance and what are the priorities we want to focus on. Mm-hmm. And Tommy, like on the one hand, I mean, he is he is from the Philippines, right? He has a cultural context, a cultural background. That's like something which was like super essential. But then on top of that, he worked in the on-demand industry for like years and years. Wow. He's been working with Postmates in the US. He's been working with Uber, very much focused on like data analytics, operations. So he really understands like what are critical factors in this model. And then combining that with the cultural context, that's obviously was a really great fit. And we initially, like we met through Kaya and have been like, I was still in Germany, right? He was in the Philippines already, back from the US, and have been like discussing this back and forth. And there was a lot like obviously getting to know each other, like understanding what the other one can do. But on top of that, also like really getting to know each other. And is there like a personal fit? And that if there's no personal fit, the rest is like, doesn't matter anymore, right? So that's, and that's like a big check mark. And also like from our like personal point of view, my Aileen, our people manager, is always telling me, we are also there quite complementary, right? I'm the one who's like always like want to march forward, like do stuff like faster. And Tommy is the one who is like then a bit more reasoned and like calm me down and like putting it sometimes in a bit like, really structure. Structure is great, to be honest. But no, but also like taking a little bit of a different angle. And then the third one, Subu, who joined a bit later, but super essential. So our CTO, and basically, I mean, from a skill set point of view, that like was like no question at all. He's like done mobile, right? We're a mobile first company, he has done backend. He has been working with engineering teams. He has been in the on-demand industry. So that was like a massive check. And then also we met in person. So he's living in India. We met basically in Singapore. Then also confirmed like, hey, spent a week there together, ultimately working on the company, but also getting to know each other. And then this was a point where we said like, look, we really, the three of us, we get along each other with each other. We have like skill set, which is really matching. And well, let's do this, right?
That's amazing. And that's what I want to find out, because again, majority of the startup founders that technically decide to create a startup come from, they know each other from before, they saw a problem and they want to do it together. There's prior chemistry here. And this is what's interesting, because if this didn't work, if you didn't have prior or you didn't have or develop that chemistry, this will implode. It won't even get there, because it all starts with you three, right? What were the building blocks you had to come? Because again, you built this on the fly. As you're building a company, you're technically on honeymoon mode, not knowing each other's quirks, right? How do you build that dynamic? And you guys are both alphas. You had prior successes coming in, but what were the biggest adjustments that you had to also find to really find that flow in chemistry? Outside of what the numbers are and whatnot, to make this work? Because the reason why I'm asking this is there's other startups here out there for sure that will be like, hey, let's replicate that. On paper, we fit. But at the end of the day, the chemistry still needs to be built. Just like any type of romantic relationship, you got to go on several dates first before we find that flow. How did you develop that on the side? Because if this dynamic would ever work, you need to develop that fast and you need to make those adjustments fast as well.
Yeah. No. So as you said, like, I think you have to look at like on paper, what are skill set, what have people done before? Is this like a fit, right? So that's the first step. And that's something you can assess easily and fast. And then the other part is like the personal fit and like, how do we work with each other? And I think the one thing is, well, is there actually like chemistry? And that's nothing you can build. That's something either there is or there's not. But that's also something you learn probably in like 2-3 meetings. Like you get along or you don't. So, and that's a lot of gut feeling, to be honest.
Right. It's just like dating. Yeah. It was a good date. All right, let's do it again. If not, like, I'm going to swipe left, right?
Pretty much like that, right? And then the third thing is, like, as you said, I mean, Tommy and I have been sitting in the store and like, or in our small like office room we had, and we were sub renting somewhere, and like, but we have been sitting there like day and night together. And that's, as you said, it's something you build on the fly. And I think for us, it was a lot about like being very clear and transparent about our ways of working, right? So what is like sort of important for me? How do I work? How do I tick? At the same time, what is important for Tommy? What is important for Subbu? And then actually like respecting that and working like towards that. And then obviously continuously doing that again. So we have in our company this like sort of like framework of PD chats, personal development chats. It's like basically between Subbu, Tommy and me, but also with the rest of the team, that every like sort of 6-7 weeks, we sit down together and recap of the last like period. Really not work related, but rather like sort of like how did the work in general go? And then take away like what went well, what are like the improvements we want to do, and like clear takeaways. And that is going in both directions, right? If I sit down with like my like one from my marketing team, they are telling me, Julian, hey, this is what you did well. This is something well where we need to have some improvement. And then like, okay, I do the same, and then we have our key takeaways.
That is amazing. Now, it can't just all you three. You need to build a rock star team around you. But how did you then build that team? Because again, this is where nuance comes in. We need a lot of locals who understand the game by heart. And again, what type of talents do you guys surround yourself? And especially in this competitive market, you're not the only startup trying to hire quality talent. How did you recruit them in?
So what you said, the rock star team, that's something I really want to underline, right?
Yes.
Our team is amazing. But it's a good point. I mean, finding the right talent is not easy, and it takes time. Yes. And sometimes, but also you can only go that far in interview process, and then you have to like ultimately say like, hey, we do it or not. Looking at our team, I mean, we are lucky, right? We are an international like founder team, and we're really also tapping into that international pool of talent. Nice. So on the one hand, especially on the teams which are more consumer facing, so marketing, our commercial and assortment team, these are really the homegrown talents because they have a better cultural understanding. They really know how here the consumers are ticking. So there we really went strong on this one and really got together like super cool team. Then when it comes to the operational playbook and more of the mechanics of the model behind it, that's where we got also some international talent on board. Awesome. So on the one hand, I was able to also bring some people with me from Germany, from Gorillas. Right? They have done it before. They know the playbook and they're like tremendously helpful in the operations, building the operational processes. Like also like knowing the business model, like really helping to craft stories, which we want to communicate. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And then also like Subbu coming from the Indian background, tapping into there the tech and UI, UX design talent pool that we also get got people from there. So ultimately putting together like a well-rounded team, right? Putting them into the right position, giving them like targets. But then it's also, I mean, our team is like, extremely dedicated, like really, I feel like proud to work in this company. And then it's like, obviously, so they are working, so we managed to do that and they create amazing outputs. But at the same time, I mean, this is not a sprint, right? This is a marathon.
Yes.
Same time, we are really looking into like work-life balance already, like because for people are really working a lot, like, but how can we make sure that they don't after a year say like, hey, it was a nice ride, but like now it's enough. How do we make sure they stay with us for 5 years longer and longer?
Correct.
That's really our goal.
That is amazing. All right. Last few questions before I let you go. This will not happen if you were not able to then fundraise and get the right investors on board. Can you just talk about how you got the likes of Gaia and how instrumental were they, especially in getting you the first few checks that you were able to get?
Yeah. I mean, so Kaya was the key institution in like helping us get this off the ground. Mm-hmm. So initially, for me, I mean, coming from Germany, like having done the model before, but like zero culture context, being from like, how do I talk with customers? Like actually, like how do I set up a company, right? Which is not that easy in the Philippines. So there was like getting things off the ground, Kaya was like the key support Tommy Sugunai got. And also in the beginning, like giving us support from their teams to from a tech point of view, from like actually like expanding, finding real estate to like ultimately like product topics. And then basically Kaya's on an operational level, Kaya's like input was like slowly going back while we were building up our own team.
Nice.
But then the other point, I mean, obviously Kaya, Paolo, Liza, extremely well connected. So the whole intro to Robinsons coming from them and also to all sorts of other investors. So they're like having their backing, having the signaling coming from them, plus all the intros to the funds that was obviously helping us a lot to, well, get foot into the door. But then it was us basically like sealing that.
That's amazing. Now, again, you've then have these things. How were, what's next for Dart? And again, I'm pretty sure this is not going to be the last time we're going to be seeing you, because I think with that, with that margin, with that the opportunity that you have, it's going to be hard to see you guys not succeed, because all the factors are there. And especially with the world coming back to normal in the Philippines, when the world is normal, people like to spend their money. And, you know, the with activity comes a new set of problems like traffic. You know, you're not back in the comfort of your home. And in the next coming months and years, I see that we're going to go back to normal. But what's next for you guys? And what are the things that we should look out for?
Yeah. I mean, so for us, it's pretty much like a clear, like sort of next steps roadmap mm-hmm. of what we want to do. So ultimately, we have at the moment, we have two stores. We cover three cities. We cover mm-hmm. Mandaluyong, we cover Makati, and we cover BGC. So now it's really about like even further refining the model, like refining the product and then like further scaling it. But at the same time, we're obviously already looking at like further expansion. And there is like really about the NCR region to further like cover other cities, serve more customers. I mean, ultimately, if you're not in our radius, if you're not in the right city at the moment, we see a lot of customers who are reaching out to us, commenting on our Instagram posts saying, hey, you're still not in our city. We're like, yes, sorry. We will let you know once you are there. We are there. So it's really about like now growing into other like cities, expanding our service and like showing that we can like grow anywhere. Obviously, then a few other cities are interesting in the Philippines, which we are looking at. And then let's see. I mean, our clear focus is the Philippines, and mm-hmm. we want to like grow here, expand here. This is our home turf. This is where we have the support from Robinsons. But who knows, like maybe go into other Southeast Asian markets in the future. That's something we definitely not rule out.
That is amazing. Again, thank you very much, Julian, for such an amazing episode. But before I let you go, please invite people over to try out Dart. Where do they, if they want to work with you, and again, and want to reach out and beg you to open their city, where do they go and how do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, there are several ways. I mean, on the one hand, you can like go onto a website and we have a form there to do it. You can write us through the app. If you want, you can also write me personally. I'm always looking, or if you have feedback on our product, I actually do a lot of like customer calls because it's one of the most powerful things. So you can reach out to me to julian@dart-app.com. And also, I mean, anyone who wants to try it out, low risk, just try out Julian 400. That's a voucher code, basically gives you off 400, up to 400 pesos.
There you go. Kept. All right, 400 pesos. That's a lot of food that you can get. Care of Julian. But again, thank you very much. Before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Apple, Spotify, or any type of podcast app. And if you see our rating, just give us some feedback. What do you prefer? 5-star for us or whatever? Give us feedback so we can improve the podcast. And again, if we did say some jargon, it's going to be in the show notes and hustleshare.com. And lastly, if you want to be part of the community of HustleShare listeners, it's going to be HustleShare community on Facebook. Again, Julian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.